This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is AmTower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark AmTower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. AmTower Off-Center with your host, Mark AmTower.
Welcome to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today is Elizabeth Haar. Elizabeth is a partner at Hinge Marketing. Elizabeth, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Mark. It's great to be with you.
It's great to have you here. Give people a little bit of background on you and a little bit on Hinge, please.
Sure. Well, let me start with Hinge. We are a professional services marketing and branding firm. So what that means is we focus only on the professional services marketplace. And really what we do at the end of the day is we just help firms grow. And we do that through strategic branding and marketing. And as far as my background, that is my background, but it's in the technology services space. So I grew a tech firm myself and kind of evolved into helping other tech firms grow.
So how long have you been with Hinge now?
So I've been at Hinge for a little over 4 years.
Okay. And a partner already. Hey, there you go. Now, Hinge produces a lot of information. You did a revamp of the website recently, and you're an online publisher for the industries that you serve, each of the professional service segments that you serve, and it's pretty cool. And the reason I bring that up is what we're going to be talking about today is basically the case for content marketing. So, how many different types of content do you guys put out?
Gosh, you know, I don't even have number at the top of my head, but I would say a healthy handful. And by that, I guess I don't think of number of different types of content as much as I do what types of content are desired by the audience. So we've got a handful of different types of easy to digest types of content like a blog. Mm-hmm. We have in the middle things like guides that take a little more time to digest. And then on the other end of the spectrum, we have things that involve more investment of time to digest, like attending a webinar or reading a book. So we really think of a spectrum of content, if that makes sense.
Right. And I have at least 4 books produced by you guys in my mm-hmm. library.
Excellent.
3 of which I picked up a week or so ago when I was over there talking about LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. So let's start with what content marketing is and what it isn't. So give me your best shot there.
Sure. You know, it's interesting because it's a good question. I think a lot of firms don't quite have a pulse on what it is and isn't. So let me start with what it isn't. Content marketing is not self-promotional. And what I mean by that is content marketing is not a press release on an award or a recent contract, for example. Those are important, but that's not content marketing. Content marketing is about educational, informative content that tells a story of your expertise. PR, on the other hand, tells the story of your firm. So that's one big difference. And another thing that I think is hard for firms to grasp is content marketing is neither superficial blather, I think that's obvious, nor is it an academic discourse on all things security, for example. Your decision makers are busy people. They're the ones reading the content. And they're, of course, going to cast out something that glosses over details, but they just don't have time to go through something that's going to take hours to digest or has lots of acronyms that they've got to, look up elsewhere. So content marketing achieves that balance between superficial and overly detailed so that the reader walks away with some immediate next steps or how-tos. That the other thing. And I think the other thing I would say, what content marketing is or isn't, is just like professional services firms can't fall into that old trap of trying to be all things to all people. Content marketing is similar. It can't be all types of topics in all places. So successful content marketing is on a focus topics that fall within your domain expertise, and it gets promoted in the right channels. And we'll have the opportunity to talk to, you know, go into more details about that later.
Yeah, the channels are particularly key. It's great to have the information. It's great to produce the information, but if you don't share it, there's not a lot of value there.
That's right.
One of the things that intrigues me about, especially about Hinge, is not only your advocacy of content, but the use of content in marketing your own firm. So let me take that in a slightly different direction and ask why is content necessary? And I don't want to restrict this to any type of company, because I personally believe content is necessary for companies selling virtually anything to anyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would tend to agree with that, Mark. And, you know, it used to be that any of our buyers, so our prospects, our clients of any firm, it used to be that they relied on things like case studies or awards or looking at the leadership within a particular firm and kind of using those types of information to make judgment calls on whether we're a firm worthy of their business. And those are all still important, but those things are almost secondary to what counts today. And what counts today is your expertise. And, of course, all those things I just mentioned do make a statement on your expertise, but nothing proves your expertise like well-written content. So that's why content has become necessary. We do research day in and day out. Now, this is on the professional services marketplace, but it has applicability to others. Our own research shows that there are a couple top criteria that get you in the door. And the number one thing is expertise. And you can't put awards up on your website to showcase your expertise, nor can you rely on your leadership, however heavily credentialed they might be, to make a statement on your expertise. You have to prove it. And proving it happens through content that's written on topics your audience cares about. So that's kind of it in a nutshell.
Okay. So number one, define your area of expertise.
Yes.
And narrowly, broadly?
Well, it feels like a gamble for most firms to have a focus and think of a niche focus or a narrow focus. But I think I mentioned earlier, we see a tendency to try to be all things to all people. And same thing with expertise. Firms tend to shy away from focusing too narrowly because they feel like, well, then we're not going to be seen as an expert in this. And we actually do own some IP in that space, so we want to make sure we're seen there. So to the extent that it's possible, you've got to have focus, and to the extent that you can focus, it's got to be narrowly defined so that you really start to come out as the go-to firm for that specific thing.
Right. And just because you focus your content primarily on one thing doesn't mean you don't do other things when you get your initial business with a client.
That's absolutely right. You know, the other thing that our research has uncovered that in the world of experts and creating visibility around your expertise, there are three things that really get you to the top faster. And one of those things is having a defined niche area of expertise. And that's because it's very easy for our audience, I'll call it audience, so your prospects, your clients, your influencers, your partners, it's so much easier for them to say, I know Mark, he's the guy that does this. It's a lot easier for people to refer you when they've got a defined way in which to refer you.
Right, and in my career, I've been helping companies market to the government as Amtower and Company for 30 years now.
Yep.
I've had to evolve because in the 80s, that was direct marketing.
Mm-hmm.
In the 90s, it was integrated marketing. And in the 2000s, especially in the teens now, it is very much social media marketing. So I've had to morph myself along the way.
That's right, and you know, firms can use content marketing to help them do that and articulate how they've evolved to address the continuing changes of the marketplace. It's a very effective way, and I will add, less costly way than some traditional marketing practices that firms rely on.
Okay, and I agree, and there's a point there I want to pick up immediately after the break. But you're listening to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, back after these messages. Welcome back to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest today is Elizabeth Haar. She is a marketing expert with Hinge Marketing. You can find Hinge at Hinge, H-I-N-G-E, marketing.com. Elizabeth, in the latest book that I got from you guys is a study on spiraling up, which is, you know, profitability and visibility sort of tied together. But one of the points in there is that you don't have to spend extraordinary amounts of money. In fact, faster growth firms that you study often spend less money than others and still grow quickly. Give me the reasons behind this.
Well, that's exactly right, Mark. And I always kind of chuckle to myself when I think about those stats, because it in a way it might mean less business for someone like me, but actually it's true. Firms don't have to have high dollar budgets on marketing. There's a much more effective way to reach your target audience, and that is through online marketing, largely reliant upon good content. And this stat is about a year old, but I think it's still very germane. There is data out there that shows that firms who are reliant on online marketing for about 40 to 60% in that range of bringing their leads through online marketing, it's about 60% less costly than bringing those leads to your firm through traditional marketing. And indeed, our own research backs that up, where we find that, again, that sweet spot of bringing, or leads that come to your firm, when you reach that 40 to 60% spot, firms are showing growth rates that are four times faster than firms who don't bring in leads through online means, and twice as profitable. And it's no surprise when you think of the mechanics around online marketing. You're not spending dollars traveling and being out of the office, nor are you spending dollars on pieces of direct mail that aren't going to be read. Instead, you're spending fewer dollars on writing content that sits on channels that work for you 24/7. And so, you know, the economics of that are kind of a no-brainer.
Yeah, well, when you come down to it, I mean, if you're buying space in a traditional publication, that's a pretty costly thing. And mm-hmm. then you're relying on somebody actually spending time reading the advertisements. I mean, it's great when it works. But, you know, it begs the old advertising question. I spend, you know, 50% of my money is not working. I don't know which half.
Right.
So
that's right. And the other thing about online marketing, it has a longer shelf life than any of the tactics that might fall within traditional marketing. And you mentioned our book, Spiraling Up. That was actually one of the first books that we wrote and produced at Hinge. And when we look at our web analytics, still to this day, it is the piece of content that has the highest volume of downloads. So it just goes to show that when you produce relevant content, it really has a long shelf life and can bring the visibility and credibility over time that a direct mail piece or a piece in a, however well-reputed it might be, a piece in a trade pub doesn't.
Okay. Well, this is a good time to bring this up. The books, the webinars and stuff that we're going to be referring to that Hinge does, they're available at hingemarketing.com, and most, if not all of them, are available for free. And I've read a lot of their stuff now, and the reason Elizabeth is here is it's all really good stuff. The other reason that Elizabeth is here is that in December, on December 3rd, Elizabeth and I will be doing the B2G Content Bootcamp, the first B2G Content Bootcamp ever, and we'll be discussing these strategies for large and small businesses, product companies, as well as professional services companies. So drop me a line, markamtower@gmail.com, and I'll get you information on that. But let's migrate on. I want to talk about strategy. So your content marketing is great, but what's the strategy behind this? Where does differentiation fit in? How do you position your content? How do you get it out there?
Sure. So I hear a couple of questions in there. So let me address...
I'm good at that.
Yeah. Let me address the differentiation piece first. So one of the mistakes that firms make when they try to embark on a content marketing strategy is they just have a list of 20 things that they could dialogue on. And then they do it, and there aren't any results. Well, part of the reason for that is there isn't a focus. And what you're trying to achieve with content, of course you're trying to raise visibility and credibility, but you're also trying to strengthen your brand. And the way to strengthen your brand is to always have whatever it is you do, whether it's written content, whether it's that elevator speech that comes out of your colleagues' mouths at a networking event, whatever it is you do, it needs to tie back to the essence of who you are, how you're differentiated, how you're positioned. So how that ties back to a strategy around content is if you're a security expert in healthcare IT, for example, and you start producing content around, you know, other realms of security, it doesn't tie back to the essence of who you are. And so there's no real tangible benefit then, because it's not strengthening your brand. So the one strategy that firms must adhere to is making sure their content is related to the essence of who they are, how they're differentiated, and how they're positioned. And another strategy, and this is kind of to the other question you had in there, is making sure that because your content is tied back to the essence of who you are, there are some natural themes that evolve. Because what you want to do with content is you don't want to just produce a whole bunch of different types of content out there and then leave it and hope it performs. That's not going to work. What you want to do is leverage every single solitary ounce of effort that goes into your content. So when you write small pieces like blogs, you want to leverage that effort and turn those into more substantial pieces like webinars, like executive guides. You can even use them as starting points for speaking engagements or keynotes. So the key is be strategic about the type of content, the topics you're producing, so that themes evolve and you can leverage. And then finally, you want to make sure that in your strategy, it's not just about the topics, but it's about the kinds of content. And I kind of alluded to that a second ago, but what I mean by that is have enough different types of content to be interesting to different types of audiences. Some of your audience has no idea who you are, no relationship with you yet. They're going to be good candidates for something like a blog. Take 60 seconds of their time. You also want to have content for people who are your raving fans. Those are people who will spend a little bit more of their time digesting your content, so they're going to be good candidates for webinars and e-books and whatnot. Not to say that both audiences can't look at all different types of content, but I think you kind of understand the point.
Yeah, different people digest information different ways, mm-hmm. and different people like different types of content. Mm-hmm. Some people are more visual, some auditory, some, you know, like me, you know, I love hard copy. I don't like necessarily reading on a screen. Mm-hmm. So I'm really happy that you guys provided me a number of books after my visit. So, you know, how do you research these things? How do you come up with the ideas?
So that's a great question, and the reason it's a great question is because I think that is something that gets overlooked by firms. You know, when you ask firms if they know their audience, they say, oh yeah, we talk to them all the time. We do customer satisfaction surveys. Well, that doesn't really give you a pulse on your audience because you're not getting the candid response that you get through research. Same thing with topics. When you try to figure out what you should write on, you can't have an insular approach where you're asking yourself, what am I an expert on? Okay, I'll write on those things. You have to balance what you're an expert on with what does my audience care about? And the best way to figure that out is through research. And, you know, when time and budget don't allow for primary research on your marketplace to uncover those pain points, what you can do is be very proactive in, especially LinkedIn. I think I don't know what your opinion on this is, being a LinkedIn expert, but I find that LinkedIn is a very powerful tool for figuring out what your audience is interested in and dialoguing on. If you pay attention to active group discussions, it's not a perfect picture, but it's a good picture of what the key topics and concerns are.
I agree completely with that, because if you find a discussion that goes as viral as they can in LinkedIn, which means that they can last for, you know, a couple of weeks, some even longer, and have a string of, you know, 50 plus comments on them, you have to pay attention.
That's right. And I think, you know, I think, at least from my perspective, where I'm sitting, gone are the days when executives roll their eyes when they hear about LinkedIn or other social media channels. This is a very real and viable way or channel that firms are making judgment calls on other firms' expertise. I don't know if you would agree with that.
Well, I still run across the occasional executive or sales guy who says, well, I don't think my audience is there. I looked at some of the profiles and it just doesn't mm-hmm. click. So let's take our break. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'll be back with Elizabeth Haar of Hinge Marketing after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest is Elizabeth Haar of Hinge Marketing. One more question I want to ask on the strategy side, and that's, you know, when when I'm trying to convince clients that they need to produce relevant content, you know, the eyes take that deer in the headlights look and they go, well, number one, I'm not really that good at writing. Number two, don't you have to do that every day? So mm-hmm. let's talk a little bit about the frequency.
Sure. So it is something that scares people off. They feel like it is something they've got to do every day. But we've actually found that there is an achievable minimum amount of content and thought leadership that you can put out there and still be effective. And of course, this all depends on the size of the firm, the number of industries you serve. It's all very contingent upon those things. But in general, you can get away with a couple of blogs a month as long as you're connecting all the other dots that need to be connected. And so in terms of frequency, the number one thing a firm can do to fail is to start and stop, and then start and stop again, and start and stop again. So when people come to your blog, let me just use blog as an example. People get to your blog, if they see that you are consistently posting every other week, they're not going to say to themselves, gosh, you know, this person's posting every other week only. These other guys post three times a week. That's not something that usually they'll walk away with. What they do see is, you know, this person is fairly consistent, and that's what they like to see. So I think firms don't have to worry about having a huge volume on a weekly basis. Rather, it's the consistency with which they do it. And then making sure that, and this is a whole other topic, but making sure the dots are connected so that when you do post only every other week or maybe once a month, that you've got other ways for people to engage with you when they do read that content. And that can happen through an offer on every single blog to attend a webinar or to download another piece of content or to engage with you in some other way.
Okay. Well, let's, let's migrate from there into that content creation. Because again, this is the scary part for some companies or some individuals at companies. Some people are just very uncomfortable writing. And they really don't think they can produce the information themselves. Mm-hmm. So how do you get people started?
Well, we find that even when you are a very effective writer, you as an expert, you probably don't have the time required to do all the things you need to do. So we have found that the optimal way to get content created is to, of course, first pinpoint the subject matter expert, but have a trained journalist helping them and support them in the content creation. And what I mean by that is a trained journalist understands and has the wherewithal to first interview the subject matter expert and then second, translate what that subject matter expert shares into a palpable piece of content. Not everybody can do that. You can't just have someone who writes well. It's got to be someone who's trained to listen, to ask the right questions, and then synthesize those thoughts into a good piece of content. So that's the first thing, is have somebody to support your subject matter expert. And by the way, it's not disingenuous when you're having somebody else write your content on your behalf. It's still your thought leadership. It's still your IP. You're just getting the support you need as a busy executive, rainmaker, whatever you do for your firm. You're just getting the support you need to get that out there. And so that's the first thing. The second thing is you need to make sure you've got a team in place to then promote that content through the right channels and to track it. So you really need to have a team in place to support the creation of the content itself. And I don't know if any of that makes sense.
Well, it does, and it leads, frankly, the team in place, internal or external. A lot of people don't understand that there are a number of freelance journalists available who work on a project basis or on a white, they'll work just for one white paper. They'll work pretty much any way you want because they're professional writers. They have a number of clients they work with, and they aren't extraordinarily expensive as a rule. And there's a number that work in the government market that have a familiarity in the government market. They know the language, for instance. So using IDIQ or GWAC with them, they're not going to go, "What's that mean?"
That's right.
So they're available. But let's. There's another aspect here, and you touched on it before, that regularity issue. Why is a content calendar necessary?
Well, a content calendar really keeps the eye on the prize, so to speak. And it's just human nature. When you don't have a checklist, when you don't have a calendar, when you don't have something to, keep the order of things, it's just going to fall to the wayside. So I think that's just an intuitive reason. But another very practical reason is the planning that an editorial or a content calendar helps with. And what I mean by that is, we talked earlier about the importance of leveraging every ounce of effort you put into every piece of content. So with an editorial calendar, you're able to see out into the future, and your team is able to say, we're going to be putting these 6 blog posts out over this time frame, and that means that we can then produce an executive guide four weeks down the road because we will have written these blogs. And then after that, we can host a webinar, or there's a keynote that we'd like to secure, and we want to make sure that these particular content pieces are in place. So there's a very practical reason that brings tangible economic gains back to the firm, you know, where this content planning takes place.
Okay. And again, go back to your area of expertise, the themes, topics, and this is where you kind of map out the topics and develop the total rhyme scheme.
That's right. It's all about creating efficiency around your efforts. And the firms who understand that and get a calendar in place are the ones who are in that category of firms who grow faster and are more profitable from using online marketing.
Okay. Now, there's a role for visual, for graphics here. Infographics, for instance, seem to have caught the popular appeal via the web. I see just, you know, every day something new posted in various groups on LinkedIn. And I've noted in the Hinge books, particularly on the cover of the Hinge books or the covers of the white papers, you use some interesting graphics too. So what's the role of the visual aspect here?
Sure. So, you know, it's not just because people like shiny rocks. People still like shiny rocks, and so there's admittedly a place for visuals and graphics in that context. But graphics done correctly can tell can be a powerful storyteller for what you're writing about. And again, just like you mentioned earlier, different folks are attracted to different types of content. They want to digest things differently. And so for those very visual people, you want to make sure that you're able to tell the story through a visual manner. And graphics are a great way to display data. You know, it's not always compelling when you pick up or you download a piece of content and you see a bunch of percentages and numbers throughout the content. That's not always a compelling read, but when you see a graphic that lays out that very same data, it's a totally different experience for the user. So just like we talk about user experience on websites and how important it is to think about that, it's also important to think about user experience with your content. And so while often overlooked, I think visuals and graphics have a real important role to play there.
Cool. We'll talk a little bit about getting those users to your content after the break. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, back after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest is Elizabeth Haar of Hinge Marketing. You can find Elizabeth at hingemarketing.com, H-I-N-G-E marketing.com. We're talking about content marketing here. And again, I want to point out, on December 3rd, Elizabeth and I will be in Columbia, Maryland, doing a full day, the B2G Content Bootcamp. So if this resonates with you, shoot me an email, Mark at Federal Direct, or Mark AmTower at markamtower@gmail.com. address. Everything rolls over to that anyway. So if you want to learn how to do this or want to do it better, come to that. In the meantime, we were talking about the user experience, really engaging people through the visual content, but you still have to drive the people to the content. So when you guys produce stuff or your clients produce stuff, how do you get other, you know, people, that targeted audience that you're going after, to find the content?
Sure. That's a great question. And there's a lot of thought that goes into that particular promotion strategy. So we kind of think of promotion as happening in four sectors. And let me just name them quickly, and then I'll very briefly explain what I mean by those. But the four areas where you want to promote your content are through online search, social media, any partners you might have, and then through nurture tools. So let me just first explain what I mean by search. You know, your content should always be optimized, should always have relevant keywords. That is, as you probably know, that's a subject unto itself. But for the purposes of this, I'll just say having well-researched keywords in your content helps search engines draw people to your content. So that's number one. Number two is through social media. You should be promoting your content. It shouldn't only be on your website, but it should also be in the social media channels where your audience plays. In most professional business cases, it's in LinkedIn. Sometimes it's in other channels, Google Plus, Twitter, sometimes even Facebook for recruiting type of content. And this is where you can really engage your staff. One of the things that we do is at Hinge, you know, we all have the subject matter experts producing their own content. But then our marketing team actually involves the entire Hinge team and notifies them that a particular blog post is going out and gives them a sample, some sample words or hashtags or keywords to use in their own posts so that they can start promoting the content. So the idea here is use social media, but also use your colleagues to help promote the content that you're putting out. The other two channels I mentioned, I'll just talk on briefly. The third sector we think of when promoting content is through nurture tools. So when you've got a series of blogs, for example, those are fine candidates for email or newsletter content as well. So you don't want to forget that in addition to social media, you've got these kind of nurture tools at your disposal. And finally, I think firms kind of overlook the ability to use any partners that they might have. And what I mean by partners is just relationships you have with other firms who aren't competitors but are other credible players in your space. And this is where guest blogging and sharing of content can be extremely powerful. And I want to mention it because I think it's something that firms didn't do even as recently as 9 to 12 months ago. They just kind of thought about guest blogging, didn't really employ it. Now it's a top strategy for promoting content and making a statement on your expertise. Because if you think about it, what guest blogging is getting other, not just other people, but other very credible thought leaders in the space with high authority, high visibility, sharing your content. And nothing speaks to your expertise the way it does when others are sharing your expertise.
Right. Two things. I started writing in LinkedIn Pulse back in March of this year, and very quickly I found out that I could get more traffic on my posts on LinkedIn than I could at my own blog.
Mm-hmm.
And my blog has suffered some as a result, but when I'm pulling 2.5 times the audience, I know where I should be, but I can't capture any information on who's there. But I do see people regularly commenting on my posts or regularly liking my posts. So I've compiled a list of people. When I'm getting ready to put out a new post, I will alert them first that this is coming, and I'll let them look at it before I do a push. So I'll give them like a 12 to 24 hour window and just say, hey, if you like this, you know, please feel free to share. Otherwise, I'm going public with it, you know, Monday night or whatever.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
So leveraging the you know, if you've been doing something long enough, you've got some notoriety, some fan base. So, you know, and a lot of the people that you include in this are flattered that you do. So.
Well, that's right. They are. And you know, just like I'll say in the old days when, you know, it was all about going into someone's office and sitting across the table and then you shake hands. This is, you know, you're shaking hands online and creating goodwill by sharing each other's content. So, and I know you're a huge proponent of this, but when you ask others to share yours, you've got to share theirs as well, and where it's appropriate.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course. If they produce content. Not all of them do.
Content. Yeah.
So, any final thoughts here?
Well, you know, I think I would just, we talked a little bit about this earlier, but I think where firms hesitate to get started with content marketing is they it has a high frequency or high likelihood of failure. And the single reason is because their firms aren't connecting all the dots. So in terms of content, you can't just produce it. You then have to promote it. And in terms of promoting, you can't promote it in one place. It's got to be in a multitude of strategic places. So I think it's really about making sure that all the pieces are in place and that you're not doing one little thing in a vacuum.
Okay, very cool. Thank you very much for joining me again. Elizabeth and I will be doing the first B2G content boot camp December 3rd. If you're interested in information on that, please shoot me an email, markamtower@gmail.com, or you can check out my LinkedIn profile. There is information there as well. And you can find Elizabeth at hingemarketing.com or on LinkedIn. Elizabeth, thank you for joining me.
And thank you, Mark. It was great to be with you this morning.
And thank you for listening to Amtower Off-Center.
You've been listening to Amtower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Amtower Off-Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.